Big hearings this week on a big animal in Alaska, polar bears. They are big. By many counts, they're the biggest land-based carnivores, with the males weighing in at 700 to 1,500 pounds. But are they big enough to carry the hopes of environmentalists seeking to force the federal government to act against global warming? According to their website, on the day in 2005 that the Kyoto Accords went into effect, without U.S. compliance, the Center for Biological Diversity filed a petition seeking protection for the polar bear under the Endangered Species Act because its habitat, sea ice, is melting. At the end of last year, the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service did propose listing the polar bear as officially threatened and is now in the process of gathering public comment on the issue. In fact, a series of hearings have been conducted over the last few days, both in Washington and Alaska. A decision is expected next January. But what would being designated as threatened mean for the polar bear and for oil and gas production in Alaska, not to mention greenhouse gas producers throughout the country? What does the science show about the effects of global warming for the polar bear? We will try to answer some of these questions now with a series of guests. Joining me first are two scientists from the U.S. Geological Survey's Alaska Science Center. Leslie Holland Bartels directs the center in Anchorage and is a deputy regional director for the USGS, the U.S. Geological Survey. Dave Douglas is a research wildlife biologist stationed in Juneau. Thank you both for joining us so early in the morning, your time, and hello from New York.
Good morning.
Good morning, Brian.
Ms. Holland Bartels, the USGS recently concluded a study of Alaska's polar bears. What did you find?
Well, we've really completed a series of studies that look at various measures of health of the population. We worked with our Canadian colleagues to look at one of the southernmost populations of polar bears in the western Hudson Bay of Canada, and we found that following many years where the Canadians had found declines in cub survival and the size of adults, that in fact that's translated into a significant decrease in the number of bears from about 1,200 bears in the late 1980s to about 900 bears as of 2004. Our work off the Alaska coast shows also that there has been a decline of cub survival from about 65% to 40%. We've also seen that there are fewer females denning on the sea ice, which for the Alaska population is where they've normally denned, at least through the period of our 40 years of research, from about 60% on the ice now to only about 30%. So more of the females are moving off the ice and onto the land to den. But the characteristics that we've been studying on the sea ice of the Alaska population haven't resulted in an ability by us to actually see a population decline. So we're seeing what we think are precursors to a pattern of decline of the Alaska population, and we in fact see a significant decline in the western Hudson Bay Canadian population.
Dave Douglas, you study sea ice specifically. What does the science say about how fast it's melting and why?
Well, the science shows us that over the past 30 years approximately of the satellite observation record, that the summer sea ice, that which doesn't melt during the summer, is declining at about a rate of 10% per decade. And we find that that the patterns of melt across the Arctic are not uniform. There are areas that are melting more rapidly. And we're finding that one of the most rapid areas of melt, on average, are those areas north of Alaska in the Beaufort Sea and north of our neighboring counterpart in Russia in the Chukchi Sea. And reasons for the melt are several, and we have found that from about the 1990s onward, there's been a decline in the amount of old ice that is in the area north of Alaska, and this decline in the age structure or a trend towards younger ice is thought to be sort of a trigger that while not unexpected that this might happen, because there are oscillations in the Arctic where we see patterns change from cold phases to warm phases over decadal scales, but this younger ice pack that began to form in the 1990s, serving as sort of a trigger that has allowed the warmer air temperatures, as well as warmer ocean temperatures, water temperatures that are entering the Arctic, to make that ice pack more vulnerable to the summer melt.
Dr. Holland Bartels, you know that some critics, including the head of Alaska's Fish and Game Commission, have suggested that the polar bear population is actually growing and that they can adapt to dry land. They don't need this sea ice. Is that true?
Well, I would have to say that the research that's been done by our agency, as well as our Canadian colleagues and Norwegians and the Russians and many other international specialists would have to say that polar bears are extremely dependent on sea ice, and the food that they eat is ice based. Ring seals and other can they get other food sources? Well, we see the pictures of bears getting into garbage or on whale carcasses, but there's very strong evidence that if they don't get on the sea ice, they can't gain the weight that they need, and they don't reproduce successfully, which is one of the hypotheses that we have for the really significant decline in cub survival that we have in Alaska. Certainly more people in the native communities and coastal communities are likely seeing more bears. I mean, I think there's very clear evidence of that. As bears are moving off the ice and are being required to stay for longer periods of time on land, but our Canadian colleagues have a very strong series of research that indicate that bears staying on land for longer periods of time are losing weight, they're not reproducing, and that's the primary reason why they believe that the Western Hudson Bay population is in a noticeable and documented decline.
Dave Douglas, might there be other threats to the polar bear? Overhunting, do oil and gas exploration interfere with its survival? Do we necessarily lay this at the feet of global warming, as most people understand that term?
Well, the majority of the world's polar bear population live in very remote areas, and hunting pressure is very limited. In fact, the polar bear is protected by some of the circumpolar nations. There's a very limited hunt in Canada, and only coastal native Alaskans are allowed to subsistence hunt the polar bear. And those hunting pressures have been relatively constant for several decades now, since protection acts were implemented back in the 70s. So we don't feel that hunting pressure is changing or posing a great threat. And, industry and development in the north, they take great precautions and care to monitor their activities and minimize disturbance, and there's been no detectable or significant threats that we've detected in those activities.
We're talking about the decision by the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, the proposal, I should say, by the Fish and Wildlife Service to list the polar bear as officially threatened, a threatened species under the Endangered Species Act. They are now in the process of gathering public comment on the issue. There have been hearings this week in Washington and Alaska, and we are speaking first, and we'll have some other guests coming up in a few minutes, to Leslie Holland Bartels, director of the U.S. Geological Survey Center in Anchorage. She's a deputy regional director for the USGS as well, and Dave Douglas, a research wildlife biologist stationed in Juneau. The polar bear could become the first animal listed under the Endangered Species Act because of global warming. And Dr. Holland Bartels, can you explain what part the U.S. Geological Survey plays in this fish and wildlife decision to propose endangered species status for the polar bear?
Well, Brian, that's a good question, because I think most folks don't automatically think about the U.S. Geological Survey and polar bears in the same thought. And there are probably two very good reasons for our involvement. We've been conducting on-the-ground research on polar bears and polar bear habitat, including sea ice, for coming up on 40 years. We're on our 39th year. So the center has a cadre of experts on this subject, and our work, along with the broad international research conducted by the Russians and the Canadians and others, was used by the Fish and Wildlife Service in their status review, which is the basis of their draft decision document. In addition to that, the U.S. Geological Survey is the science arm of the Department of Interior, and so we're asked routinely to provide scientific guidance to the Secretary of the Interior on complex issues, and this is certainly one of them.
What about the terms threatened species and endangered species? You know, you talked about a little bit of decline in the polar bear population and the cub survival rates. How much additional global warming would have to take place, and for how long, for the polar bears to disappear?
Well, I think that's a question that that we don't have a solid scientific answer on right now. The premise of the Endangered Species Act, particularly in the threatened, is that the species likely to become endangered in the foreseeable future. And Dr. Meehan, I'm sure, can speak to this more eloquently than I can. And the Fish and Wildlife Service accepted the International Polar Bear Specialist Group's definition of foreseeable future basically as 45 years out from now. 45 years out from now, that this species, there's enough information to suggest that it's going to face threats likely to become endangered in 45 years.
And Dave Douglas, why the polar bear? As I understand the ecological chain here, the polar bear would be threatened because the sea ice is melting, and that diminishes the supply of ice seals, which the polar bears like to eat. So is the ice seal also threatened, and maybe more threatened?
Well, I think the issue is that the disappearance of the sea ice removes the capability of the polar bear to hunt seals. Polar bears can only capture seals, their primary prey, from the surface of the sea ice. But there are many species of seals, and they're not all tide or ice dependent like the polar bear is. And so as the ice recedes and draws northward, the hunting opportunities for the polar bear are restricted. While there are still seals, most seals can get by very well in the pelagic environment, but the polar bear is not going to have access to them if they're restricted in their range by the diminished ice cover.
All right, we have some more guests to talk to on this. I want to thank Leslie Holland-Bartles, director of the U.S. Geological Survey Center, Alaska Ice Center in Anchorage, and Dave Douglas, research wildlife biologist with the USGS stationed in Juneau. Thank you both very much. It's been very informative.
Brian, thank you.
And coming up next, we will have a policy debate on whether the polar bear should be listed as a threatened species under the Endangered Species Act and what that would actually mean. Because if global warming is causing the endangered species status, would we all have to change our lives in order to protect the polar bear? Stay with us.